Glory to Jesus Christ! Annunciation Byzantine Catholic Parish presents Light of the East, a program revealing how the Eastern Catholic Churches have nourished the Roman Catholic Churches and today's world in profound ways through their histories, traditions, mysteries, and spirituality. Hello, I am Father Thomas J. Loya, pastor of Annunciation of the Mother of God Byzantine Catholic Church in Homer Glen, Illinois, and this is a story of the Eastern Churches, an inspiring story of faith, courage, intrigue, mystery, spirituality, dissension, and reconciliation. But most of all, this is an expression of a great experience of faith through our unique divine liturgy. Join with me now as we look toward the Light of the East.
Light of the East is also underwritten by a grant from the charitable Koch Foundation, whose vision is to strengthen and propagate the Catholic faith by providing grant support for a wide variety of evangelization efforts. Learn more at KochFoundation.org. Koch spelled K-O-C-H. And Light of the East is also supported by Eastern Christian Publications, where you can find the prayers of the Catholic Byzantine Daily Office at ecpubs.com and easternchristianmedia.com, a broadband network. For you to learn more about the Eastern Catholic Churches, that's easternchristianpublications.com.
Christ is risen. Indeed, he is risen. Welcome to Light of the East. I'm Father Thomas Loya, your host. First and foremost, our continued prayers for the repose of the soul of Pope Francis. In the Byzantine tradition, which is our tradition here at Light of the East, the Byzantine Catholic tradition, one of the many Eastern rites of the Church, there's a customary saying. It's not a dogma, but it's something that is believed, at least as a custom, that when someone dies on Easter or the week of Easter, which we call Bright Week, that they go directly to heaven. And that, of course, is when Pope Francis passed away. So we keep praying for his soul, as you do for anyone. And at the same time, we have a certain confidence or hope, at least according to custom in the Eastern churches, some of the Eastern churches, that if you die during that week after Easter, which again, we call it Bright Week, you go to heaven. Now, in the wake of the Pope's passing, and as we anticipate the naming of a new Pope, there's obviously a lot of speculation, a lot of actual discussion on what will be the actual legacy of Pope Francis. And I say what will be the actual legacy because, let's be honest, Pope Francis, and I like to call it in these terms, he is a head scratcher. He was a head scratcher. In other words, he was a person that was kind of a mystery. He was complex. It was oftentimes hard to understand him. Sometimes it was easy to understand him. Sometimes he was very direct and clear and very solid. Other times, of course, he seemed to be ambiguous or confusing, and not necessarily by his own fault. It was media and language translations and so on. But what will be his legacy is probably something that will be discussed for quite a while and debated. But I want to present to you here what his legacy will probably be for the Eastern Catholic Churches. And I'm going to speak objectively here. I know there's a lot of thoughts and sentiments about Pope Francis, and they're kind of all over the spectrum. It's understandable because he was different. He was different for three reasons. First of all, he was the first pope who was ordained a priest after the Second Vatican Council. So he did not have the same background, the same formation as all previous popes had, especially John Paul II and Benedict XVI. They were formed before Vatican II, and they were the sort of the crossover generation. They were part of the Second Vatican Council, and they lived, of course, their priesthoods, their episcopacies, and their pontificates in the time after the Second Vatican Council. But Pope Francis was different in that regard. Secondly, he was from South America and from Argentina, and all that that means in terms of its history, the culture, and so on. Because popes, as you know, are influenced by their culture, certainly to some degree. So Francis was, in part, a product of his own culture as well. Then the third thing is, he was a Jesuit. And Jesuits have their own kind of perspective. It's rare that a Jesuit would be a pope. In fact, I don't think it's something that it's encouraged in the Jesuit order, but Pope Francis answered the call, even as a Jesuit. So he was a very different, shall I say, package. And so we should expect things to be different with him, and even perhaps confusing at times. Sometimes very clear, sometimes very confusing. But how was he with the Eastern Catholic churches? His legacy with us will probably go down in history as being a very splendid one, actually. You see, Pope Francis was very, very good to the Eastern Catholic churches. And this will come as a bit of a, again, another head-scratcher, maybe even a bit of disappointment or kind of a, maybe a little bit of an angry confusion among those in the Latin Rite who are very dedicated to the traditions of the Latin Rite, especially the Latin Rite Tridentine Mass or the Latin Mass and any of those kinds of traditions. Because Pope Francis, as we all know, kept the practice of that kind of suppressed. He did allow it. He allowed it in certain communities that were organized to be dedicated to that particular Mass in the Latin Rite. But otherwise, he did not want it to be practiced. He wanted it to be sort of low-key. There are times he granted permission, but it had to be sort of on a case-by-case basis. So he didn't entirely suppress the Latin Mass for the Latin Rite. And he wasn't against it in and of itself. He was not against it in and of itself. He was against what he believed was a division that was happening between those who prefer the more traditional practice in the Latin Rite and those who were okay with the more recent Novus Ordo practice. He believed there was a bit of a division happening or a potential division, and that's why he suppressed the Latin Mass. I don't think it was so much of a personal choice on his part. It was more for what he thought was the good of the church. Now, we can, of course, have our own thoughts on that. But the interesting part is that as he suppressed what was the great ancient tradition of the Latin Rite, he helped to preserve and encourage the practice, the restoration even, the preservation of the ancient traditions of the Eastern Rites. In effect, in one case, this is in India, in one of the eparchies, which is a diocese, we call it eparchies in Eastern churches, one of the eparchies in India of the Syro-Malabar Church, one of the many Eastern rites in the Catholic Church. Over time, they had adopted some Latinizations in their liturgy, and what Pope Francis told them was to return to their more authentic tradition. In particular, there was an issue about which way is the Mass or the service in the Syro-Malabar Church, which they call Kubana, in other words, their Mass, their liturgy. Which way is it oriented? Does the priest face the people? Does he face ad orientem, in other words, facing the altar? And there was discussion in that church about that. And Pope Francis told the Syro-Malabar Church, you have to return to your own authentic tradition. There he was telling the Eastern churches to return to their ancient traditions and liturgies. He told them that you have to turn the altar back around, because they tended to copy, in this case, the Novus Ordo, the priest facing the people. And he said, no, you're from the Syro-Malabar tradition. You should be facing ad orientem. And what happened was a group of them from this eparchy had a great resistance to that. They did not want to change that. And Pope Francis insisted, and they insisted, no, they weren't going to change it. So he sent a delegate to speak to them. That delegate was actually an archbishop from my church, the Byzantine church from the Ruthenian jurisdiction. He came from Slovakia, and he went on behalf of the Pope to tell the Syro-Malabar church there in that particular eparchy that they need to correct that orientation of their own Kubana, in other words, their Mass, their liturgy. And the Pope thought that, well, if he sent a representative and told these people in person, they might yield then because of that. Well, they got even
You're
more.
You're listening to Father Thomas Loya on Light of the East.
Some things at this delegate who came to talk to them. There were some pretty tough customers in this issue. And finally, the Pope himself had to say to them, if you don't obey me, you're out of communion with me. You're not obeying the Pope. And he said that you are going to be vulnerable to excommunication. But as of the broadcasting of this particular radio program, in which I'm touching on the subject, as far as I know, the Pope never has yet to follow through. Of course, he can't now because he has passed on. But he did not follow through on excommunicating this group of Syro-Malabar Christians. So the Pope went to the wall he really went to bat for the Eastern churches for the restoration of their own authentic tradition. Another example of his kindness to the Eastern churches was in this case, a case of married clergy. In North America, and this is a subject for another program, in North America in 1929, the practice of Eastern Catholic churches who had married clergy was prohibited in North America. In other words, priests could not be married even in the Eastern churches if they're serving in North America. This happened in 1929 by a decree. It did not change the ongoing, unbroken practice of married clergy in our countries of origin, such as in Eastern Europe. And let's be clear about something. You have to say it correctly. In many Eastern churches, married men can become priests. Priests never married. Sometimes people say to me, oh, Father Tom, in the Byzantine Church, you Eastern Catholics, your priests can get married. No, they cannot get married. They have to be married first, then they become priests. We have celibate and married priests among us. Well, the practice was stopped, so it has a whole lot of political background to that. And so we did not have married clergy. We were not permitted to have or ordain married men to the priesthood in North America since 1929. However, Pope Francis restored that.
You're listening to
Father Thomas Eastern Catholic on Light of the East. North America. He basically told them, if that is your tradition and you bishops of your own church want to restore that, then you have my permission to do so. So this was another example of Pope Francis being very deferential to the Eastern Catholic churches and to our venerable traditions. When we come back, we're going to talk a little bit more about Pope Francis's legacy with the Eastern Catholic churches. I'm Father Thomas Loya on Light of the East.
Every day, Father Loya posts a brief 2-minute Facebook video on the Annunciation Byzantine Catholic Parish homepage. You'll be amazed at what you can learn just by watching. Light of the East mission is Christianity's reunion and to tell the story of the Eastern lung of the Catholic Church. We need your support. In order to keep Light of the East on the air, you can make a donation now by going to ByzantineCatholic.com. That's ByzantineCatholic.com. And then donate securely using any major credit card. With your help, we can keep Light of the East's illumination bright. You are listening to the Choirs of Annunciation Byzantine Catholic Church under the direction of Timothy Woods in Homer Glen, Illinois. This is the music you hear on Light of the East and is sung during the sacred liturgy at Annunciation Byzantine Catholic Parish. Order online at ByzantineCatholic.com. All we ask is a donation of $20 or more, which includes shipping and handling, to Annunciation Parish for each Theosis CD. Send a check made out to Annunciation Parish at 14610 Wilcook Road, Homer Glen, Illinois, 60491. And may God grant you.
I'm Ann Weber from the Catholic Spirit Radio Network, and you're listening to Light of the East.
It's no secret that Father Loya and other speakers from the Tabor Life Institute are available to speak at your parish or group on marriage and family topics seen through the lens of St. John Paul II's Theology of the Body. Other topics include Eastern Christian spirituality and the significance of art in the church. The Tabor Life Institute can arrange for marriage encounters, parish missions, and can help your parish facilitate teen faith formation in either English or Spanish. For Father Loya and other speakers, contact the Tabor Life Institute by writing to taborlife@earthlink.net. That's Tabor, spelled T-A-B-O-R, life, at earthlink.net.
Welcome back to Light of the East. And again, I say to you, Christ is risen. Indeed, he is risen. I've got one more example to share with you about Pope Francis and the Eastern Catholic Churches. Remember when the controversial document Fiducia Supplicans came out? It was a document that said that priests could bless couples who were in what we call irregular situations, such as a same-sex couple. It did not say that priests could bless that relationship. It could just bless those two people. I know there's a very fine line there. It was very controversial, very confusing. Well, when that came out, with all of its controversy, one of the ranking prelates in the Eastern Catholic Churches, his name was Major Archbishop Sevchuk, of the Ukrainian Greek Catholic Church, which is one of the many Eastern rites of the Catholic Church, he simply made a very simple statement. When that document came out, Fiducia Supplicans, he simply said, it doesn't apply to us because we're Eastern Catholics and we have a different spirituality about blessings. Now, he said that, and ordinarily you might think a pope might say, well, wait a minute, this applies for everybody. I have decreed this. But Pope Francis did not do that. When that Major Archbishop made that very short, clear statement, Pope Francis just accepted it. So this is just one of the several examples in which Pope Francis has shown a great deference to the Eastern Catholic Churches. So his legacy, as far as Eastern Catholic Churches are concerned, will be a very stellar one among us. I don't know if that will be true among everybody in the church. There's a broad spectrum of opinions about the pontificate of Pope Francis, and we'll leave that up to everyone else to discuss and for history to tell the story. I just wanted to share with you something that may not be well known about Pope Francis, that in terms of the Eastern Catholic Churches, his legacy will be most appreciated because he was very kind to us. He was actually helping us to retrieve, and preserve our authentic tradition. And this is very much in keeping with the document of Vatican II on the Eastern Catholic Churches, which explicitly tells the Eastern Catholic Churches to return to any of their traditions that may have been lost. And they were lost when the Eastern Catholic Churches reunited with Rome. You see, the Eastern Catholic Churches were part of the Orthodox Churches. This was after the Great Schism in 1054. But 500 years later, parts of the Orthodox churches, parts of them, began to reunite with Rome, the Pope of Rome, and Rome with them. And so they became the Eastern Catholic churches. They retained their same spirituality liturgy as their Orthodox counterparts, but they accepted union with Rome. They accepted the Pope. And what happened, though, was in trying to be accepted, both by the Latin Rite and also trying on our own to fit in, we began to adopt what are called Latinizations. In other words, to make ourselves a little more palatable, recognizable, almost in imitation of the Latin Rite of the Catholic Church, because the Latin Rite did not know much about us. They didn't think we were really Catholic. So we had to kind of keep proving that. And we slipped into what was called Latinizations, where we lost some of our own traditions and we adopted ones from the Latin Rite. Now, the Latin Rite traditions, of course, are good in and of themselves, but they were not our traditions in the Eastern churches, and we lost our own authentic tradition. So that was not a good thing. So the Second Vatican Council called the Eastern churches back to their own authentic traditions, and they said to rid ourselves of any Latinizations and to restore anything that was lost. That was the clarion call for Vatican II for the Eastern Catholic Churches. So now we have another good legacy among the Eastern Catholic Churches of the Second Vatican Council. Once again, the Second Vatican Council, there's a broad spectrum of reaction, opinion about that. But again, for the Eastern Catholic Churches, the Second Vatican Council, just like Pope Francis, those legacies are very positive in our regard. But Pope Francis, in calling upon the Eastern Catholic Churches to retrieve, restore, preserve their authentic traditions, was actually following through on the call from the Second Vatican Council. So there's a certain consistency there about Pope Francis in that regard. This is just something I wanted to get out there, that as we look at his legacy, that we include that part of his legacy that is in reference to the Eastern Catholic Churches. And I wanted, out of, I think, honesty and fairness to the legacy and their memory of Pope Francis, to present these things to you. This is not a comment in any other form, in any other way, about what everyone else might think or have in terms of their estimation of his legacy. Like I said, it's a very broad spectrum, and understandably so. He was a very different kind of pope. So naturally, you're going to get a broad spectrum of opinions and reactions to him. But history will tell, and we'll let time and history tell us what his legacy actually is. It's probably too early to tell right now because he was rather complex. But for the Eastern Catholic churches, it's pretty clear to us that his legacy in relation to us was a positive one. Now, we are in still this post-resurrection time. We call this the Pentecostarian. It's the time that goes from Pascha, Easter, to Pentecost. And in the Eastern churches, we have our own prayers, our own holy days, our own themes that unfold. Just as it did before Easter, we had these themes every Sunday leading up to Pascha, Easter. We have themes that unfold the Easter miracle, the resurrection miracle, all the way up to Pentecost. And this particular Sunday is called the Sunday of the Myrrh-Bearing Women. In other words, we feature different figures. Last time, we featured the Apostle Thomas, the Doubting Thomas. That was also, in the Latin Rite, Divine Mercy Sunday. And what's interesting about that is a correlation. Divine Mercy Sunday has its own image or icon in the Latin Rite. But if you look at the Byzantine Rite, the icon for what for us is St. Thomas Sunday, the same Sunday as Divine Mercy Sunday, it's a very similar kind of icon, the way Christ is pictured. And it's a very similar kind of theme. It's a theme of God's mercy to the doubting Thomas. So merciful that he allowed the doubter to actually utter the most important words in the entire scriptures. The very reason that God became incarnate in the form and the person of Jesus Christ, why he taught, healed, suffered, died, rose, and ascended. All he did, all of that, was for one thing, that we might say those few words that Thomas said when he saw Jesus in the upper room, my Lord and my God. And that privilege, that profound privilege, was given by Christ to the doubter himself. So it definitely is a Sunday of great mercy, East and West. But this Sunday is mercy again, in another way, for the women and for Joseph of Arimathea and Nicodemus, who came to the body of Christ with a great deal of reverence. They understood the sacredness of the body, of that human body of Jesus Christ. But on this Sunday, we have some interesting liturgical texts that act as proof text for the reality of the resurrection. And we say, in a sense, certain things while we sing it. It's like dogmatic hymns. They're like proof texts for anyone who doubts that Christ resurrected, or even to debunk that theory that the soldiers were told to say that, oh, someone came and stole his body in the middle of the night. Remember, they were paid, according to the Bible. Remember, the soldiers were paid to spread that lie around. But the liturgical text relative to the women, they debunk that. They show us different kind of proofs. And they do so in some of the obvious realities. Like, for example, it says here, why do you sprinkle your myrrh with tears, O women disciples? The stone is rolled away, and the tomb is empty. Behold, life has triumphed over death. The seals give brilliant witness that the guards of the goddess have watched in vain, that mortal nature has been saved by the flesh of God, that Hades is in mourning. Hasten in joy, proclaiming to the apostles that Christ, the conqueror of death, is the firstborn of the dead. He shall go before you into Galilee. Many references are made in the liturgical text for today. They refer to the stone and the seal. In other words, look at the evidence. There were soldiers guarding there all night long, but Christ was not in the tomb. But the stone was not broken. The soldiers did not move it. They couldn't move it the way it was set up. It was like, in a sense, a connection with how Christ was born. He came into this world, and the Virgin Mary remained virginal when he came into this world. We see that the tomb was a virginal tomb, no one had used it before, that he was buried in, and it remained intact, although he resurrected. So how else do you explain that? How else do you explain that the tomb was basically intact? The angels eventually rolled the stone away, but it was not by human beings. It was not by somebody breaking it apart. Like it said, the seals were unbroken, just as the virginity of the Virgin Mary remained intact, unbroken, when she gave birth to Christ. So there are many aspects, details, that are brought out in the liturgy for this day of the myrrh-bearing women that help to offer proof of the resurrection. It is now for us to believe in it and to live it. Christ is risen. Glorify him. I'm Father Thomas Loya on Light of the East.
To hear Light of the East again, visit ByzantineCatholic.com and click on the Features and Programs tab and on iTunes. Thank you for listening to Light of the East. We encourage you to tell a friend about Light of the East and to visit ByzantineCatholic.com. Light of the East is produced by ADC Media.
In the 1800s, Lincoln lost 8 elections before he was elected President of the United States. In 1963, Phil Knight started a shoe company. Everyone told him he would fail. By 2016, he had turned Nike into a $91 billion company. In 1985, Shaquille O'Neal was cut from his high school basketball team. He was too slow and clumsy. Coach Brown from LSU met him and told him to believe in himself, work hard, and that someday he can come play for him. He did. And then he went on to become one of the best basketball players in history. What if all those people listened to the voices that told them they were never going to accomplish their dreams? Friend, if God planted a dream in your heart, don't listen to the people who tell you you're too young, too old, too short, too tall. Go for it, and then leave the results to him. God's dream for you has less to do with what you accomplish and more to do with who you become along the way. This is Chris Stefanik from RealLifeCatholic.com on EWTN Radio.
Thank you for listening. Next week, we will return to the Light of the East. To learn more about Annunciation Byzantine Catholic Parish, visit our website, ByzantineCatholic.com, where you will also find an archive of all of our programs. In order to continue Light of the East with its mission of Christianity's reunion, we need your support with a donation. Any amount will be a blessing. Please make out a check to Light of the East Radio and send it to Light of the East, 14610 Wilcook Road, Homer Glen, Illinois, 60491. That's Light of the East, 14610 Wilcook Road, spelled WILL-COOK Road, Homer Glen, Illinois. Or donate online on the homepage of ByzantineCatholic.com. From the Light of the East, a new dawn of unity is in sight. God bless you, go with God, and may God grant you many happy years.